You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talevi, and tackling your questions this evening are Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth and Thamsanqa Netta from Shiloh Capital. If you'd like to send those questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thamsanqa, Nick, nice to see you both there this evening. It's a horrible day out there, not just for us, for world markets generally. I think the NASDAQ is down, what, close to 25%, US markets between 12% and 15%. We are now down 9.5% for the year. So where we were feeling quite flush a few weeks ago, the exact opposite is probably how we're doing today. Thamsanqa, if I may start with you, are you feeling quite sanguine about this and looking for maybe opportunities to buy shares on the cheap or cheaper, or are you in a state of like a bunny in the headlights?
The first option, I'm looking for value. I think there's a few things to consider. The first is that, in general, a market valuation, especially on the technology stocks, was due. The valuations over the long term were looking quite overpriced. The second one is the inflation numbers coming out globally, but specifically the US, which are forcing the Fed's hand towards interest rate hikes. And the key element about that is the interest rate is the key element of valuations. So most valuations use the key interest rate, the 10-year treasury, as part of their risk-free rate. So as interest rates go up, the valuation changes. As valuations change, large portfolio managers adjust their portfolios, and the rest of us take our pudding. But I think we've got to accept that this is part of being an investor. We've got to take the crookeds with the straights. Over 5 months, the chart goes up and down. Over 5 years, it generally goes up. And I think once we make peace with that and try and find the gems in this rough, I think we'll be better off.
Nick, I mean, having said that, I saw one of the quotes in an FT article today was, it's difficult to say if everything is low enough and bearish enough. Way to go on the positive front. So, I mean, I suppose that is the question. So, as Thamsanqa says, now is an opportunity to look for stocks at better prices. I mean, specifically, even among the tech stocks, you know, companies like Google and Microsoft, these are money-making machines that are not trading at much better valuations, I would imagine. But I suppose you don't want to buy maybe in the midst of the sell-off. Maybe you want to wait, or is that just impossible to say? But from your perspective, do you think that there is more to the sell-off? So in other words, that we're going to drop further from this point?
Well, that's so difficult to answer. But, I mean, I would certainly say from my experience of watching markets over the years is you don't want to walk in like a day like today where everything's down 2%, NASDAQ's down 3% and try to pick a bottom. You know, you want to wait till you know, things settle a little bit, volatility comes in a bit. All the risk assets or the risk barometers that we're watching, you know, oil, the VIX, euro, dollar, et cetera. You know, you want to see the swings going from, you know, 2-3%, 4% swings down to a half. And then you want to make a view. But at the moment, I would, you know, not to be overly bearish, but I would concur with what the FT is saying. You know, we just don't know where things are going to head to. You know, we're in an environment where things are negative for risk assets, you know, of all of, you know, with rising interest rates. First, we've got rising interest rates. We've got inflation forecast rising, and we've got growth forecast decreasing, and oil at 110. Just those four simple facts make you realize, you know, without jumping out the window tonight, that it's not generally, it's just not good for risk assets. I'd certainly advocate just watching until the dust settles a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the one thing that could turn the situation around would be if the inflation numbers started to fall and quite rapidly, and suddenly everyone thinks, okay, inflation's not as bad as we fear, the interest rate increases won't have to be as dramatic, and growth will probably just pick up again, and this was a bit of a gulp. Thamsanqa, do you think that is likely, that inflation actually... that this is a blip? I mean, you know, going back to Lazier's word, transitory, or actually should we not even be, you know, hoping for such a situation?
Look, it's unlikely because inflation at this stage is being caused largely by cheap money. So for you to then start pulling back on that cheap money, you have to up interest rates or reduce the quantity of money that's available. And either one of those is going to cause some form of stock market correction. The beautiful thing, Ben Bernanke was once quoted saying that the beautiful thing about the stock market, it's an immediate indicator of the Fed's decisions. And the stock market reacts quickly to announcements, statements before interest rate hikes, and will also then react quickly to interest rate hikes. So I think it's unlikely to have a large decline in inflation in a transitory manner. There are certain steps. We've been having cheap money globally since 2008. So we're looking at a very long and sustained period of money being pumped in, asset managers and banks taking almost 0% money, and it's now gone into assets instead of going to real assets. And that's where the inflationary element is going to come into play.
Yeah. Can I just ask, and before discussing some of the questions that have come through, is there anything, so besides holding back and maybe keeping your money in cash, is there anything that you just absolutely would not buy at the moment that you think is kind of guaranteed to lose you money, whatever the outcome is? I mean, is there any obvious contender for do not park your money here? Nick, if I may start with you.
Well, equity-wise, I wouldn't touch high growth shares at all. I still think there's further downside to come, especially the ones that are loss-making. You know, it's they're out of favor. The sentiment's against them. Don't touch them yet. You know, you think Zoom or Peloton or Tesla's cheap, they're going to get cheaper. That's the first one. And secondly, I'm not a bond expert, but I certainly would avoid bonds at the moment. Even though we've had a massive sell-off in bonds, I still think there's further to come as bonds need to catch up with interest rate projections. So off the top of my head, Juliet, those two, bonds and high sort of loss-making growth shares, I'd avoid those for now.
Okay. Tamsanka, do you have a similar view, an alternative point of view?
Yeah, I would avoid alternative assets, even though there will be value, the share price or the pricing will be different. So any sort of alternatives, cryptos, venture, private equity, listed or not listed, REITs, I think that's the kind of environment you will avoid. Not because there's no value there, but because the price to value ratio is going to be substantially low for a sustained period.
I mean, and also, I think liquidity is drying up, as you say. And I think I saw a headline, something to do with Goldman Sachs and SPACs kind of standing well back. I mean, like the SPAC listings of 18 months ago, it seems, is maybe had this kind of glorious moment, a couple of months in the sun. And things are obviously going sort of unraveling there at quite a pace. Okay, getting on to questions as we discuss the day's events. There's a question on SPAR. So there are still questions on equities, and if you know you've got money to invest, you're still going to look at individual shares. And the question is, with a PE ratio of less than half the sector average and its share price 20% lower over the last year, I wonder whether it's time for a nibble at SPAR again. To my alarm this weekend, I found my local SPAR had closed down and then remembered that there's more than one SPAR in the country and more than one abroad as well. Thoughts are welcome. Well, I have to say my local SPAR is going great guns, it seems. So I hope the viewer doesn't take his SPAR's closure as a sign of what's happening out there. Tamsanka, if I may start with you, your thoughts on SPAR and its valuation?
Yeah, so I think the economics of SPAR is great. I think the issue they have is what percentage of the market they're able to wrestle away from ShopRite, Checkers, Pick and Pay, and Woolworths. I think that's where their real issue is their competitiveness. I think in terms of operations, profitability, and even the general market spread of their shops and retailers is good. However, market shares, I think, is where they get hurt. The other three are really aggressive. Woolworths has differentiated itself as a premium retailer. So you're basically fighting with ShopRite, Checkers and Pick and Pay. And that fight is quite brutal. And I'm not sure if SPAR is going to be able to maintain itself over the long term against those two other giants.
Hmm. Nick, what's your thought? Because I don't know, I sort of feel like I might have a slightly different take on a SPAR when I hear what you say, Tamsanka, but SPAR's also got these localized stores, which, you know, okay, maybe Woolies has got the smaller format stores and that's where they were very clever on building their store network. But I sort of feel that there is a Spar just about anywhere. And that is one of the beauties of this business. Nick, your thoughts on Spar?
Yeah, they certainly fitted into the sort of lockdown narrative, didn't they? Where no one wanted to travel, you know, 20 km to the nearest store. You stayed local, you went local, you certainly tried to support what was 2 km up the road, and Spar fitted that narrative perfectly. And exactly to your point, you know, what you find in one Spar was completely unique to that neighborhood compared to the others, and that was the beauty of their business model. And I do like it, but. Under the new sort of paradigm where inflation is rising its head aggressively, food inflation in particular, I think they're going to have their work cut out against the bigger ones. You know, as you mentioned, ShopRite, Checkers, yeah. And if you had to look offshore, you'd talk about Walmart, for example. So I'd rather be I like the food retailers because the food inflation story, but I'd rather be with a food retailer that's got the pricing capacity and the power to certainly be able to bear some of the brunt and not pass it all on to the consumer. And therefore, I'd have to lean more towards the ShopRite. So I think it just, you know, year or two ago, I would have said yes, but now with this inflation now, I'd be very cautious of Spar purely for what's happening with food inflation. Otherwise, as a business, I think they run a good business. I think they've just got a lot of headwinds.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose now ShopRite is they are the big guns. They have the pockets to be able to keep inflation low for their customers, and they can absorb the hits. I noticed that Clicks had a really good day today. You know, so in the midst of the market sell-off, there were a couple of shares that did well. Clicks was one of them. I mean, we wrote a story just arguing that they're just so expensive relative to the kind of underlying profit growth that you're seeing at the moment. Do you think those are also, however, still shares that you might want to own, or don't buy them if you don't own them because they're pricey? Tamsanka, your thoughts on the beauty retailers per se?
I'm not too keen on Clicks, and I think largely because of the way the business works price wise in comparison to a competitor like Dis-Chem. I think their model is different. Their partnerships, also their rewards programs, are not as strong as the other parties, especially Dis-Chem. So you'll find that I think over time they're not going to make the kind of money that they would in comparison to their peers. However, one has to acknowledge that management is doing their best to be competitive. They're shutting down stores that are not profitable. They're opening in areas where they believe the demographics will be helpful. They've partnered with Engine and other guys to sort of drive people to partner their fuel with their spend. So there are efforts being made by management. I just think relative to their competition, they are quite pricey.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I talk about Spar having Clicks doing pretty well today, up 2%, but that is in the context of where it's come from. Its highs was 320 rand, is now 280, whereas Dis-Chem has certainly dropped a lot less. But if you had Clicks in your portfolio, would you sell it or would you just stick with it?
I'd stick with it, but to your point and to Sankwa's point as well, it's not cheap. It is very, I would say, one of the more expensive retailers out there. They do run a niche business, and it is a well-run business. Management have certainly done their best in a tough environment. But for me, from a pure pricing point of view, it's as a share, it's too expensive for me.
Okay. How about gold? Interestingly, in today's sell-off, it was pretty brutal and it was pretty all round, and you might have expected gold to do okay, but it didn't. The question is the panel's view on gold and gold shares. Nick, if I may start with you, why is gold kind of getting it in the neck along with every other asset? It's not proving itself as a sort of safe haven in the sell-off. And, you know, some shares in particular had quite a brutal day, AngloGold Ashanti off over 6%.
So, I mean, real yields, look no further than that. Yields, 10-year yields, interest rates, real yields, you name it, it is all gold is up against it purely because of that. You know, as we all know, gold doesn't have a yield. It doesn't give you a return. And as one's ability to get a return on less risk becomes evident, i.e. we've got raising rates, you can put your money in the bank, Now you've got negative rates in most parts of Europe. A few years ago, all of a sudden you're getting 1.5% on the German note, 1.1, I think it is now. So the options of getting a return on your money, it's all about to do with real yields. Gold shares, I mean, I actually don't mind them. I think at some point they will come to the fore. I'm not a gold bug, so full disclosure there. But if I had to look in the, within the current investing environment, with everything we spoke about in the first half of the show, you know, gold tends to do quite well historically in a higher inflation environment. Ironically, you've just got to be careful when you time it. But if I did hold some gold shares, I'd certainly take a look at them. Something like AngloGold Ashanti, they cash flow positive. They're offering a nice dividend. The business is reasonably well run. You've just got to, as I say, just got to watch what these interest rates do. I suspect the first bit of a hint maybe this week when we get some CPI numbers out of the States, if inflation looks like it might have peaked, maybe it's a time to take a look at gold. But I'm not necessarily negative gold at all.
Okay. Tapsanka, how about you? I mean, if you look at that longer term chart, I mean, only 2 years of AngloGold Ashanti, it is basically more than halved. Which is quite catastrophic if you'd bought at around just under 600 rand a share. I mean, for love or money, would you buy a gold share or would you run a mile?
I would buy it if it was part of a diversified portfolio of minerals. So if the producer is not just producing gold, but they're producing platinum like Sibanye-Stillwater. When you have a balanced portfolio like that, you can manage it well. You can sort of have an idea of demand, the demand side of both minerals. And I think the real story around gold is opportunity cost. If you put your money there, you're losing out on other potential future returns. So it's always going to be an opportunity cost story with gold. If people feel or investors feel like they are more likely to lose money in general, they'll put their money in gold. So they stop loss. But if there's other alternatives that are safe as houses, there are options in terms of bonds. There are options in terms of bank deposits. There's other options that yield better returns than gold at this point. Mm. So I would look at a more diversified producer who produces more than just gold. And I think that's a better way to go than just pure gold producers.
Okay. All right. What about agricultural players? And there's a question on Zeda. So may I please have the panel's view on Zeda and Fortress as a buy at these levels? Zeda was Nick's stock pick 2 to 3 weeks ago. Is he still holding the same position post the unbundling and the special dividend payout? Nick.
Different Nick, I think. Wasn't last pick, but nevertheless.
Yes.
Do I like Zeda?
Yeah, in fact, I wouldn't have thought you would have picked Zeda. I'm sorry. Maybe it wasn't on my show. Maybe, yeah. So apologies if it was a different Nick.
No problem. So just to answer the viewer, I mean, Zeda, yeah, Zeda itself is not a bad play. The problem I've got, and it coming from a bigger sort of brokerage house like we are, is just it doesn't have liquidity for us. But I do have clients that do hold it. It is exactly, I think, sitting flat, unchanged on the year. But I'm actually, I sound like a stuck record with inflation and food inflation. I guess something like a Zeda would be definitely worth a look. My only concern is the liquidity on the side of it. It's about a $3.5 billion market cap. So it's a little bit on the small side. But as a business, it's very well run, and that should benefit from food inflation. So, yeah, you get a vote for me if you want to look at it.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, even if you aren't the Nick in question, and apologies, Tapsanka, would you look at Zeda, especially post the special dividend, post the unbundling? Is there an option for this business to come into its own again?
Yeah, so as an individual investor, yes. As an institutional one, no. Because Zeda suffers from the same issue process, suffers from PSG, its holding company suffered from, in that the valuation and the actual share price differed significantly. So you may not be able to attain the full value of the businesses that are there. And it becomes difficult for you to address that matter without the unbundling. So I think as an individual investor, you're probably going to make some money. You're going to be able to get into the stock and make some money. But as a larger institutional investor, it's going to be difficult. That NAV gap is always going to be a problem. Mm. And you may not see the returns that would potentially come to you, especially with the Ukraine wheat situation. Zeta's assets are likely to gain significantly regionally. So I think for the individual, yes. For the institution, no.
Okay. What about Fortress, and particularly Fortress, the B shares? Nick, is this one that you follow at all?
Not too closely, Julia. So no, we're a little bit neutral on the property shares. So I'm going to pass on that one. Apologies. Okay.
Tom Tucker, you said at the start of the show that a sort of alternative assets like REITs, you said, might not be where you would want to put any money at this point in time. Would that hold for something like a Fortress B?
Yeah. So I also similarly, we don't follow it closely. However, the principle of holding companies or REITs or alternatives is the same, that they'll suffer from having real estate that holds a particular value. However, the share price won't reflect that value, given capital flows. So alternative assets tend to have that problem, and REITs are one of them. So at this stage, we are staying away from that sort of asset class.
Okay. What about junior miners? So the mining Indaba is underway in Cape Town, and we have heard from, I think it's the Minerals Council amongst others, talking about just the amount of investment that is dammed up by the sheer incompetence of the Department of Minerals and Energy, not processing applications, etc. So the question on Orion Minerals applies. Does the panel follow Orion Minerals? They released an investor presentation today, which seems very optimistic about copper and nickel. Nick, I know that you don't look at this, so Tom Tucker, this question is directed at you. You said you had a brief look.
Yeah.
As a retail investor, I imagine also as an institutional investor, this is probably not a share for a big, you know, a portfolio. But for a retail investor, do you think this is worth a nibble?
Yes, I think so. We tend to look at the dual listed stocks, so Orion being one, where you have the ASX and the JSE, or the TSX and the JSE, or some form of that. Because what happens is that when there's a development, the offshore investors tend to pull the price up. You see this with shares like Renergen. So when they're invested locally only, the milestones that are achieved are not necessarily reflected in the share price. Again, small stock, the moves are quite meaningful. You can move from 2 cents to 10 cents if things are managed properly. But you need to understand the mineral. You need to understand the supply and demand dynamics. You need to understand the extraction dynamics and where the market is for that mineral. For copper, nickel, zinc, I'm not so bullish. There's elements of which to get it at cheaper prices, but and from other jurisdictions. Copper is a great commodity, but it's called Mr. Economy for a reason. Its price moves as economies move. You're not really going to knock yourself out with it. So it's a steady supply. And at this stage, they're still developing, building. They're becoming a better producer over time, but they're not yet at a place they can compete with much larger producers of those resources.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Prieska development in the Northern Cape, which has also got zinc, I think. That's interesting. I mean, so Mr. Economy or Dr. Copper, as it's known, you know, because the other argument is that copper is sort of fundamental to the green energy transition and to sort of moving to greener technologies. I don't know. Is that going to be overwhelmed maybe by slower general economic growth over the next couple of years? Maybe just sticking with you, Tom Sanko, last point before I get to Nick.
So I think the key issue is commodity prices are driven largely by two things, right? Three, the cost of extraction, the rarity of the mineral, and as well as the quality of the management. So you have a scenario where you have a lot of copper globally. So just like coal, it's not a commodity that's hard to extract. So even though a whole new market can and will grow with electronic vehicles, solar panels, and so on and so forth, it's not a commodity that's difficult to obtain. The supply chain dynamics are quite simple, and it's not some commodity that's difficult to mine.
Yeah.
If you compare it to vanadium, compared to other rare metals, a different scenario emerges there.
Nick, are you also feeling a bit more bearish towards sort of the resources stocks? And of course, you can get copper through much bigger companies than an Orion, per se.
I'm actually not. I'm a little bit different on this one. I don't mind some of the base metals and certainly some of the PGMs purely for the fact that I like their balance sheets, the cash flow positive for a lot of them. And so far, they haven't sort of indicated a top of the cycle, i.e., you know, management hasn't got out the checkbook exactly at the top of the market. So I think they've been quite prudent and I think they've learned from mistakes of the past. And I'm not just talking about the South African ones. I'm talking about, you know, most of the diversified miners in general. And also I do think you touched on the point about, you know, alternative energy, the green energy space. You know, you don't even have to understand how much sort of, you know, aluminium and stainless steel one single wind turbine in the North Sea uses, for example. So I think there's a lot of scope for the miners in a lot of that. So I think there's more positives than negative in the mining space, but I take some someone's points as well.
Okay. All right. Very quickly, getting to stock picks. Sorry, I've only left about a minute and a half between the two of you. Nick, if I can stick with you, what are you looking at, or are you just staying well away from everything?
So I'm looking at Glencore. I'm in general a bit of an observer. We're tending to be a little bit more in cash than we usually are, but I do like Glencore. I like Glencore for predominantly the fact that they are commodity traders, and traders, I don't use that word lightly. They make a lot of their money from the volatility in the marketplace, and we're seeing a bucket load of volatility, and I like it. I like what they do. So not to mention the fact exposure to oil. Oil's at $110 a barrel still as volatility continues. These traders sitting in Zug and Switzerland, they tend to come to the fore and when things like this happen. So we like Glencore at these levels, and it's done reasonably well. I mean, it's gone from 100 down to sort of 92, 93. It's held out reasonably well, yeah, which is always a good sign.
Exactly. Not to the same extent that the others have come off. Tom Sanka, how about you?
Mark Rich. on our end, Invictus Energy, listed in the Australia Stock Exchange. They're an oil and gas explorer. They've got a large exploration at the north end of Zimbabwe. It's proving to have some resources. They're doing well. They're well capitalized. The stock has moved significantly. They're achieving their milestones. And I think it's one of those shares that I think over time will return quality to their investors. They're getting tremendous government support, which is not an easy thing in that part of the world. So I think for me, Invictus Energy.
Okay, well, thank you both for picking something and not hoarding your money in cash this evening, and two interesting shares to contemplate. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. Nick Kunz is from Sunland Private Wealth. Tom Sanka Neta is from Shiloh Capital, and Stockwatch is back tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.